You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gravet. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravet, your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a healthy, sustainable world. A world where our food is nourishing and our mind, body, and spirit can thrive. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Food Integrity Now has brought you over 100 shows with some of the best experts in the world. We're really proud of our work, but we'd appreciate your support. At the end of the show, on the show page, there is a donate button for a $10 donation. If you'd like to help us out, we'd appreciate it very much, and we will continue to bring you the most updated information on what's happening with our food supply. Thank you. My guest today is Mariah Blake. Mariah is a reporter for Mother Jones, Washington, D.C. Bureau. She is a former editor of the Washington Monthly. She's been a staff writer at the Columbia Journalism Review and the Miami New Times. Her work has also appeared in the Christian Science Monitor and Foreign Policy. Today we're going to be talking with her about her recent article, Are Any Plastics Safe?, which is featured in the March-April edition of Mother Jones magazine. Mariah, welcome to Food Integrity Now.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on the show today and enjoyed your article. The tagline for your article is Inside the Big Tobacco Style Campaign to Buy the Disturbing Evidence About the Products We Use Every Day. So let's start out talking about BPA. Can you walk us through how the feds suppress evidence that plastic wreaks havoc on our hormones? I think this started back in like 1937, but it didn't really explode into the headlines until 2008. Is that correct?
Well, I actually think that probably the genesis was more like 1996. So that was the year that Theo Kolbern found that synthetic hormones, which are in plastics, pesticides, all kinds of things, can basically short-circuit the endocrine system. And she was studying wildlife in particular and finding just a bewildering array of health problems in animals that had been exposed to these chemicals. Everything from, you know, missing eyes to there was this wasting syndrome that caused seemingly healthy chicks to waste away and die. And in 1996, she published a book with her findings, and this created quite a stir. And Congress then passed a law requiring the Environmental Protection Agency to screen 80,000 or so chemicals for endocrine disrupting properties, meaning they in some way mimicked hormones. And as it happens, around this time, a scientist named Fred von Saul found that BPA, which is prevalent in, you know, a lot of products, had these endocrine disrupting effects at extremely low doses. So the combination of this legislation, which would regulate these chemicals, and the finding that BPA could potentially have effects at doses lower than most human beings are normally exposed to, was a real threat to this industry, which at the time was a $6 billion a year industry. This is just BPA, not plastics. It basically, there was, you know, the industry then worked to stymie regulation in various ways, which were very similar to the tactics that the tobacco industry used. So generating biased research was one of them. You know, there was a number of strategies they used that were drawn basically from the tobacco industry's playbook, and a number of the players were also former tobacco industry scientists or PR professionals. So there was a pretty direct line.
Okay, so BPA was shown to have estrogenic activity, correct?
Yes, among other things.
Okay. So we're going to be talking a lot about this during the show. So can you explain to our listeners exactly what that means?
So something has estrogenic activity if it mimics the natural hormone estrogen. And this is a hormone that plays an important role in the human body in a lot of different bodily functions, but too much or too little of it can cause disease, especially for people who are exposed in utero or early in life, because it plays a crucial role in the development of many organs in the brain. So that is what estrogenic activity is.
Okay, great. When this information came forward on BPA, then some red flags were raised, and they talked about it on Good Morning America, and it was in the news. So what happened next?
Well, I mean, it didn't actually start making headlines until much, much later. So until, I would say, 2008 was when it really broke through to the mainstream. Because the industry managed to muddy the picture enough that there just wasn't any media coverage of it and very little public awareness of the fact that this chemical could potentially be a health hazard.
Okay, and then we started seeing products on the market after then labeled BPA-free.
Yes. I mean, so yeah, at this point in 2008, suddenly you had a big BPA scare. A lot of retailers started pulling BPA-containing products, particularly sippy cups and bottles, from their shelves. Consumers started demanding BPA-free products. And so you had then a lot of companies quit using BPA-containing plastic. This is primarily one kind of plastic that contains BPA, and started substituting other kinds of plastic, other various kinds of plastic, although this was mainly in the case of children's products. So I think one thing many people are not aware of is that a lot of the products that are on the market are still polycarbonate, which means they contain BPA. So it's only in the case of children's products that this has really been rooted out. At any rate, once polycarbonate was removed from these products, there were new plastics that were introduced, but they weren't necessarily tested for safety or to see if they also had estrogenic chemicals in them. And in fact, many of them we now know do have estrogenic chemicals in them.
Well, I think it's interesting. You say this in your article, and I never realized that, but under U.S. law, chemicals are presumed safe until proven otherwise.
Yes. One of my sources calls this the toxic shell game. So when a chemical is found to be dangerous and banned, industry will oftentimes substitute it with another untested chemical, which may have similar effects. And that actually happened. In the case of BPA, some manufacturers substituted a chemical called BPS, which is very similar in structure to BPA, and which reacts similarly in cell culture tests, which suggests that it could have similar health effects. However, it hasn't been tested. Consumers are not aware that it's potentially a problem. So it's okay for the industry to use it. They can still slap that BPA-free label on there, and people will still buy those products.
Okay. Let's talk about Michael Green, who runs the Oakland, California-based Center for Environmental Health. And he was really concerned, just on a personal level also. You start your story with this about the sippy cup that I think it was his daughter was using, and he just had a sense that this may be leaching some type of chemicals that may be harmful to her. So can you walk us through what he did with his organization?
Yes, absolutely. Well, so Michael Green, and he works in the public health field and had seen some preliminary research suggesting that many BPA-free plastics might have the same properties. And this you know, he started to think a lot about it because at the time he had a 2-year-old daughter who had this plastic sippy cup. And every night at dinner time, he would have this a fight with his daughter because she had this pink plastic sippy cup that she loved. And she wanted to drink out of that one. And he wanted her to drink out of the stainless steel sippy cup. So he just basically, he wrestled with this and eventually decided that his organization would test a bunch of BPA-free plastic sippy cups to see if his concerns were actually valid. And they sent them off to this commercial lab in Austin, Texas, which features very prominently in my story, and had them tested. And they discovered that, and they didn't do very rigorous testing, I should add. But they found that at least a third of these sippy cups also had estrogenic activity, and that in some cases they had more estrogenic activity than polycarbonate, which is the plastic that contains BPA. Something that's not in the story, but that I think is important for parents to know, the ones that were by far the worst were color-changing sippy cups. So there's a couple of companies that make color-changing sippy cups. They change color when you put a liquid, hot or cold liquid, in them. And kids love this. But these are potentially very toxic products.
So he found that one-third of these tested positive for estrogenic activity. What happened from there?
Okay, well, so I mean, the lab that tested his sippy cups, it's this lab based in Austin, Texas. It's called Certachem, and it has a sister company called Plastipure. It's run by a University of Texas neuroscientist named George Bittner. And George Bittner and the company, what it does is it tests various products for estrogenic activity. And Bittner and another scientist from Georgetown University, and I guess there was a number of scientists, Bittner's scientific staff and a professor from Georgetown University, were working together on a study. They were testing numerous different kinds of commercially available products for estrogenic activity. And in early 2011, they published their results in Environmental Health Perspectives, which is the NIH's premier journal, and they found that basically all commercially available plastic products leached synthetic estrogens. So, meaning that all of them were potentially harmful, or many of them were potentially harmful to human health.
Yeah, so that must have really riled the plastic industries, their concern for their bottom line. So what did they do to try to suppress this evidence?
Well, there was a multi-pronged approach. One thing that happened is the American Chemistry Council, which is the primary chemical industry lobby, hired this former tobacco industry scientist to write a letter to the journal arguing, basically refuting Certachem's findings. They paid him $15,000 to do that.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there is one company, so Eastman, Eastman Chemical, it's a $7 billion a year company, and it produces this new kind of plastic called Triton. And Triton is marketed as being free of all estrogenic activity. It is probably the only plastic on the market that is marketed this way. Bittner's study found that it was actually more estrogenic than BPA containing plastics. So Eastman, after the results came out, began working to counter Certachem's findings. And it did that in various ways.
Okay. And so in essence, they found that Triton was more harmful to human health than BPA.
So scientists who study endocrine disruption, which is chemicals that mimic hormones,
mm-hmm.
believe that there's substantial evidence that endocrine disrupting chemicals generally are harmful to human health, but so many of them have not been tested that we don't know the specific health effects of every one. Although there tend to be certain health effects that are common to these chemicals. So, but it did find that it was more, so Certachem's tests did find that Triton was more estrogenic than polycarbonate. Just that it could be equally or more harmful to human health.
And the ingredient TPP, that is the main ingredient in Triton, is that?
No, that's an additive in Triton. So there's a number of ingredients. The TPP is a chemical that exists in Triton. Preliminary studies by Eastman itself, these were computer modeling studies, found that Triton was probably highly estrogenic. And this chemical has since been categorized as a probable endocrine disruptor by the European Union, which is systematically testing chemicals. So it will probably be regulated in the European Union at some point in the future because of the potential harm to human health.
But it essentially has not been tested the way BPA has been tested here, correct?
Very few chemicals have been tested the way BPA has been tested.
Okay. And it's my understanding also that BPA can alter genes. Can you speak a little bit about this?
Well, and this actually happens to be true of other endocrine disrupting chemicals that have been studied intensively. And it operates on an epigenetic level. So meaning exposure to this chemical, particularly in vitro, can turn off and turn on your genes. And the sort of clearest example is there's a gene that suppresses tumor growth, and this chemical can actually turn off that gene, which makes you more susceptible to cancer. The thing that's particularly chilling about this is that it can be passed down to subsequent generations. So it's not just that the person who's exposed to this chemical is more susceptible to cancer. Their children and grandchildren are also more susceptible to cancer. It's epigenetic, so it turns on and off genes rather than altering the structure of genes.
Okay. Can you explain that a little bit further?
Well, and this is my knowledge of it is, you know, this is something I only learned about when I was writing this story.
Okay.
But I mean, essentially there's the structure of the DNA, but then there's actually, you can switch sort of certain genetic traits on and off. So you aren't actually changing the structure of the DNA itself, but you're maybe suppressing the function of a certain gene.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So how do you think the scientific evidence is being suppressed? Isn't this the same old scenario of the fox guarding the hen house with the industry funding studies so it can manipulate it for its desired outcome?
Well, that is certainly part of it. that certainly appears to be part of it. I mean, you also have regulators being held captured to industry. I mean, so for example, the FDA, which has repeatedly declared that BPA is safe, it came to light sometime around 2008 that chemical industry lobbyists were actually writing its evaluation reports for BPA.
Right. So it's kind of the same old thing. I think it's, in my opinion, it's the same thing as what's happening with the GMOs and the FDA saying that they're safe, even though there's been no long-term safety studies. It seems like the same old, same old.
I'm not familiar with what's happening with GMOs, but it certainly happens with a lot of products and chemicals. Unfortunately, very common.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, and others have written about it. I'm sure you're familiar with the book Merchants of Doubt.
Right.
I mean, there is an entire industry that is devoted to casting doubt on science showing that products are harmful.
Yeah.
Because the way our regulatory system works, you have to be certain that they're harmful before they're regulated. And you can continue to sell a product, to market a product, as long as there's doubt. So, you know, in the case of the tobacco industry, it ultimately backfired, but they were able to continue selling their product unimpeded for decades as a result of their deceptive tactics. And that, I mean, that's essentially what the goal is. You delay.
Right.
As long as you can. You delay regulation as long as you can.
Right. And I think that's exactly what's happening in so many other industries. And in essence, doesn't that make us the human guinea pigs?
It certainly seems that way, yes.
Yeah. And it's just all this information, as I was reading this article, I was surprised and yet I wasn't, because it just mirrors, you know, like you said, some of the tactics that the tobacco industry uses. And in my opinion, that the chemical companies that make the food we eat, which is a scary thought. But it just seems like we get to be their guinea pigs and they don't have to do anything about it. You know, so it buys them some time. And what's their bottom line? Is it just greed? What do you think?
Well, Fred Wamsall, who is the scientist who first discovered that BPA has harmful effects at very low doses, likes to point out that BPA is a $1 million a year. No, it's not. It's anyway. So I forget what the sum is, but you know, every day they keep the industry alive. There's millions of dollars coming in.
Well, but you say in your art that it's a $375 billion a year plastic industry. Not just BPA, but the overall plastic industry.
So that's $1 billion a day.
Yeah.
Every day they can keep selling these products. It's worth $1 billion to them.
Yeah.
There is a huge incentive to suppress information that would cause them to have to change their manufacturing process, because that's very costly.
Right. One thing I found really interesting in this article was when you were talking about some of the studies that were done by the industry, and that the rats they use in some of their studies to test these synthetic estrogen, they use the type of rat that was known not to respond to synthetic estrogen.
Yes. It is called the Charles River Sprague Dolly rat, which is quite a name. And it's insensitive to estrogen, which means it takes a much higher dose to create an effect. One Japanese study found that they can withstand 100 times more estrogen than a human female without it generating any kind of response. So these are the animals that the industry is using to test synthetic estrogens, to test potentially estrogenic chemicals. And not surprisingly, they're not finding results. I think even more concerning is the fact that most government studies, or many government studies at least, are also using these same animals. So the EPA, as I mentioned before, has this program that is supposed to screen 80,000 chemicals for estrogenic activity. It was supposed to be completed long ago, but they actually haven't finished screening a single chemical. But the animals that they're using for the animal component of this study are these rats that are insensitive to estrogen. Similarly, the FDA has a big study on estrogenic chemicals, BPA and specifically, and they are also using the Sprague Dolly rats.
Wow.
So it appears to be a way to engineer studies so you don't find results.
Right. So it's a scientific misinformation campaign, like you said in the article.
Yeah, well, and the thing is that these studies then become part of the scientific literature, and it creates the impression that there is genuine debate about the safety of these chemicals when all of the studies completed by independent scientists, or many of the studies completed by independent scientists, basically point in one direction, and that is that these chemicals are, in fact, potentially harmful to human health. In most cases, these chemicals have not been tested on humans because that is unethical. But in the case of BPA now, there are more than 90 epidemiological studies that confirm the findings of the animal studies. So it is no longer a matter of speculation as to whether these chemicals harm human health. There is actually pretty strong evidence from human studies.
And so you said earlier that there are still products on the market that contain BPA.
Many products on the market still contain BPA. Polycarbonate remains pervasive, and most people don't realize that, but you probably have polycarbonate in your home. So you probably have products with BPA in your home.
Okay.
You almost certainly do, because canned foods have them and receipts have them. Canned foods have it and receipts have it as well.
Yeah, but the linings of tin cans.
Yes, the epoxy resin linings of tin cans, and the receipts you get in stores that feel almost slippery, that is a coating of BPA.
Okay. So what do you think is going to happen? Is BPA going to be eventually outlawed? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
The regulatory agencies in the United States don't seem any more inclined to take action on BPA than they ever were. The question is what happens abroad, because the markets are so international now that if Europe starts banning BPA and other similar chemicals, it could put pressure on U.S. companies to quit using it. France actually is considering, or France has decided to ban BPA beginning in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And this has created a massive industry backlash. But I think that could potentially have a major effect, because these American companies, if they want to market their products in France, will have to remove BPA from their products. So, I mean, but other chemicals were still, I mean, at BPA, BPA is probably the most studied chemical on the planet. So you have over 1,000 studies have been performed on BPA. With these other chemicals, we're a long way from having evidence that is that solid. So it may be a long time before we see regulation, if we indeed see it at all.
Do you have a list of some of the ailments that are tied to BPA? In some of
I'm
these
not sure
studies,
I understand the question.
Well, in all these studies, you said it's the most studied chemical right now. Have they linked it to various health effects?
Yes. The list is very long.
Just give us a few.
It includes everything from breast cancer and prostate cancer to diabetes, attention deficit disorder, heart disease, aggression. It's a pretty expansive list.
So given that long list, and we still need more evidence that this product is harmful.
Well, there was just a study released, I believe it was last week, by the EPA that actually found that BPA is not harmful at low doses.
Really? Who did the study?
So it's by FDA scientists.
Uh-huh. I have no confidence in the FDA.
Well, and there the study is deeply flawed. But again, it's part of the scientific literature, and it, most people in the general public aren't equipped to evaluate the the relative validity of various scientific studies. I think many people still believe that there is legitimate scientific debate about the health effects of BPA. And, you know, there are officials at the FDA and the EPA who would probably argue that as well. Mm-hmm. But independent scientists who have studied this, they almost uniformly have found these very serious health effects.
So
in animals and humans exposed to the chemical.
So the bottom line, the independent scientists who have no monetary gain from doing this research have found BPA to be a real risk to our health. But the ones that have something to gain are finding that BPA is not a significant risk to our health. Is that the bottom line?
The difference is pretty stark, actually. In 2005, two scientists did a literature review, and they looked at government-funded research, so NIH-funded research, which is usually academic scientists, versus industry-funded research. And 95% of research by NIH-funded scientists found dramatic effects at low doses of BPA.
Mm-hmm.
Zero, not a single one of the industry-funded studies did. And the industry-funded studies all had certain things in common that would really make it virtually impossible to find effects. So such as the use of this breed of rat that is insensitive to hormones.
Hmm. Well, in your article, you also have this field guide to common plastics. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yes. So this is basically a summary of CertiChem's findings
mm-hmm.
about the various kinds of commercially available plastics that are commonly found in packaging. So, for example, there's PET, or sometimes called PEET. It's often used in soda bottles and water bottles. There's polystyrene, which is also known by the brand name Styrofoam. There's polycarbonate. There's lots of different kinds of plastic that are in use. And essentially, the field guide shows what percentage of the samples of each of these types of plastic was estrogenic. And all of them were estrogenic in some cases. So
mm-hmm.
some of the, meaning the take-home message is that there is no type of plastic that is you're guaranteed to be safe by using. So there is no surefire way to avoid exposure to these chemicals if you're using plastic.
Well, I'm going to read a couple of these just real quickly because
okay.
I just think this is incredible. You were talking about the PET or PEET, which is listed as number one. So that would be on the bottom of the bottle.
That's what's stamped on the bottom of the bottle. There's usually a triangle with a number inside.
Okay, so that's basically our water bottles. A lot of them are number one. That percentage is 75%. That's pretty high. That's pretty high. But the one that's really high is number seven, which is characteristics made from corn marketed as biodegradable and compostable. 91%.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. And that involves takeout containers, fruits and veggie packaging, yogurt cups, disposable utensils. So these are things that we're finding in sustainable restaurants.
Yes. This fact has maybe changed my life more than any other fact.
That's incredible.
It is. Now, just a point for your readers to know, number seven is actually a catch-all category. So polycarbonate is the number they use for all plastics that don't fall into any of the other categories. So just because it has number seven on it doesn't mean that it's this kind of plastic.
Yeah.
Although polycarbonate is also number seven, and that is positive in 100% in 100% of the cases. So those were the two most estrogenic types of plastic. But yes, this was a revelation for me that when you go to the health food restaurant and they give you a drink in one of those recyclable plastic cups, that may be highly estrogenic. That may be really harmful to your health.
Well, you know, I have a little local market where I live. Sometimes stop there and grab a coffee. And I was just looking at their cups and their biodegradable silverware. And I'm going to take this article into them. And I think they'll just be shocked to find out this information.
I mean, the unfortunate thing for people in that position is that there are no good options unless you develop your own plastic. There are no or few good options. And this is the thing that makes this topic so troubling, because until you become aware that all plastics are potentially damaging to your health, you don't really realize how ubiquitous they are. They're everywhere, and it's impossible to avoid them. So next time you're in your local health food store, you'll see this. When I walk down the aisle at Whole Foods now, it's about all I can think about.
Well, it certainly has changed the way I will look at things that I have in my house. And, you know, I think when I go to get my coffee at this place, I'll just bring my own, because you can bring your own container. You know, you just bring your own glass mug and fill it up. And, you know, maybe other people will have to do that too. So I think there's always a way. It may not be convenient, you know, for people like to get rid of all the plastic in their house. I mean, have you done this? Or are you in the process of doing this?
I've done it for the most part. I mean, as I mentioned when we were speaking earlier, I have a 3-year-old son, so I'm probably more attuned to these issues than I might otherwise be. So we have basically purged all the plastic. We have glass Tupperware, we have stainless steel sippy cups. But, you know, there's no way. I avoid it as much as I can, but there are situations when I can't, or, you know, I choose not to, because it would just be too, I'd have to go too far out of my way.
So, you know, given all this information, Mariah, do you have any other solutions for people? I like to talk about what's happening, but then I like to just kind of end the show with, what can people do? Do you have any ideas or suggestions, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, this is a very personal choice, but I would say, you know, what I have done is I've educated myself, and I've tried to limit my exposure by using, you know, reusable natural containers made from natural materials. That is the safest option. So using
right.
containers made from natural materials.
Yeah. And I also think it's important to share this information, because I think the more people know, you know, I think it, as with anything, if we want to make a change, we have to start speaking up and demanding better products.
I mean, in the case of BPA, it really was consumer awareness that was the deciding factor. So until consumers started demanding products without BPA, the industry didn't budge. And interestingly, last year, the FDA banned BPA in children's products in baby bottles and sippy cups. And they did so in response to requests from the industry, which was trying to reassure consumers that plastics were safe. So it is actually really, consumer awareness can play a really important role in ensuring that the products that are available to us are safe.
Okay. So on that note, you talked about the FDA banned it in baby bottles and sippy cups. So what are they made out of now? The plastic
ones. I mean,
they're made
out of the various products. I mean, some of them are made out of
Triton.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are made out of Triton. Some of them, you know, they're made out of these various plastics that are in the field guide here. So it's, you know, they are not guaranteed to be free of estrogenic activity either.
I mean, if it were me and I had small children, I would definitely just go to stainless steel.
Stainless steel or glass. You can still get glass. You can still get glass baby bottles, the old Evenflo glass baby bottles.
Right. What are the nipples made out of?
Well, yeah, that's where it gets complicated. It depends. I mean, you have the nipples and the part that the nipple goes into. I mean, those are all, and this is really the challenge. So, Certachem, the company that did the testing on these plastics, also has another company that helps manufacturers develop plastics that are free of estrogenic activity, and it's very, very challenging when you have something that has multiple components, because every single component in there is potentially, you know, can potentially contain synthetic hormones.
Not a easy thing to fix, is it?
It's not an easy problem to fix, and it's not easy to avoid these chemicals in your everyday life. I mean, I wish that I could offer listeners a simpler solution, but it's a messy problem.
It is, and I think if our listeners read this article, we've only covered a small amount of this article. There's much more information that we don't have time to cover, but the article is called "Are There Any Safe Plastics?" And it's in Mother Jones magazine, and it's in the March-April issue, and it's out on the newsstands right now, but it will soon be online, correct?
Yes. I believe at this point they're planning on putting it online next week.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Mariah, for being a guest on our show, and we appreciate all the research you did in creating this article, and I know I, for one, will be rethinking what I buy in plastic, what I do with my water bottle. I'm definitely going to go to a glass water bottle, maybe heavier and not as convenient, but after reading all this information, it just seems like the most responsible thing that I can do. So again, thanks for being a guest on our show, and we'll be back next week with another great show.